Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On yesterday's show, we discussed the details of the Trump-Republican budget bill, which is the largest transfer of wealth from the poor and working class to the rich in U.S. history. On today's Your Call, we're talking with social service advocates in California about how they're preparing and the message they have for those of you who are very concerned about what's to come. Over the past few months, a number of organizations and thousands of people involved in a group called Fight for Our Health have been demonstrating at the offices of California Republican House members, a few of whom said they would not vote for a bill that cuts Medicaid. But in the end, all nine House Republicans in California voted for the bill, including Representative David Valadao, whose San Joaquin Valley's district has the highest concentration of Medicaid recipients in the country. Of course, it's called Medi-Cal in California. Two-thirds of his constituents rely on Medi-Cal. Overall, 15 million Californians are on Medi-Cal. Some of the highest percentages live in rural counties that voted for Trump. More than half of California's children receive their health coverage through Medi-Cal. According to Governor Gavin Newsom's office, as many as 3.4 million people in the state will lose their health coverage. And it's not just Medicaid. The bill will also affect people on Medicare and those who have health insurance through Covered California. And we'll talk more about that during today's show. And then there's food assistance. About 5.3 million people in California used CalFresh last year. That is California's food assistance program. Governor Newsom said hundreds of thousands of Californians who need food assistance will be at risk of losing it, and it will punish working people by ending their eligibility. And it's not just cuts at the federal level. We've been doing shows about state cuts. And Governor Newsom and Democrats, the legislature, recently agreed to a budget deal. According to CalMatters, the plan freezes enrollment by adults without legal status in Medi-Cal, the state's health insurance program for low-income people, starting in January. The budget deal also eliminates dental coverage for those who remain enrolled starting in July 2026 and creates a $30 monthly premium for undocumented Medi-Cal patients between the ages of 19 and 59, and that will take effect in July 2027. So there are a lot of cuts to talk about. Today, we're going to find out how social service advocates are preparing. We're joined by four guests. Karen Savage Sung Young is Executive Director of the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network, an organization that brings together and mobilizes communities of color to advocate for public policies that advance health equity and improve health outcomes. Karen has a background in immigrant and mental health organizing and advocacy. Hi, Karen. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. Judy Mark is co-founder and president of Disability Voices United, an organization directed by and for people with disabilities and their families. Judy Mark is the parent of an autistic son who relies on Medicaid-funded services to support him around the clock. Hi, Judy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Amanda McAllister-Wallner is Executive Director of Health Access, an organization that works for affordable, equitable, and quality health care for all Californians. Amanda joined Health Access in 2016 as the Director of the California LGBTQ Health and Human Services Network. Hi, Amanda. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me this morning.
And Amber Christ is Managing Director of Health Advocacy with Justice and Aging, an organization that uses the power of the law to fight senior poverty by securing access to affordable health care, economic security, and the courts for older adults with limited resources. California is one of the largest and most populous states in the nation, with a large number of older adults living in poverty or near poverty. Hi, Amber. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Rose. Happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have all of you. We're already getting emails from listeners who are very concerned about what's to come. So can we first talk about who is actually going to be affected by this? Because we've got 15 million Californians on Medi-Cal, And the governor says as many as 3.4 million could lose their health insurance. So, Karen, do you want to start us off? How will people know if they will no longer have health care? And when will this go into effect?
Sure. Thanks, Rose. It's a really important question. I think this bill is certainly causing tremendous fear and concern amongst Californians, as it should, because it is the largest cut to Medicaid and to healthcare in history. And I think an important thing to know is this is going to impact everyone's healthcare, whether you are enrolled in our state's Medicaid program, which is called Medi-Cal, enrolled in Covered California, or have health insurance through your job. It is going to impact you because it is going to reduce access to healthcare services. It is going to impact hospitals that may not be able to keep their doors open. And it is going to impact the cost of healthcare for all of us. So it really will have broad implications. But to your question about the folks who are enrolled in Medi-Cal, people, there are a number of ways that people may lose their access to healthcare. There's the direct cuts to eligibility through what are called in the bill community engagement requirements, but are really reporting requirements for people who are already working and are on Medi-Cal. There's changes to which immigrants are eligible for federally funded Medi-Cal, Medicaid services. And there's a number of other changes. There's also really significant changes to the amount of money the state will have for our Medi-Cal program that may force the state to make additional cuts to eligibility. So people will find out who are directly impacted as notices come out from county eligibility offices requiring people to submit additional documentation to demonstrate their continued eligibility, et cetera. But people will also start to see these impacts to their cost of health care, to their local hospital, et cetera, fairly quickly.
Can we also talk about the work requirements? The PBS NewsHour reports that in order to receive Medicaid or Medi-Cal in California, able-bodied childless adults between the ages of 18 and 64 will have to prove that they're either working in school or doing community service for 80 hours a month. What does this mean exactly? I mean, how do you prove that you're not able-bodied?
Yes. And so this is a very, very misleading and very damaging provision in the bill. What we know about Medicaid and Medi-Cal recipients is that 92% are already working or are in school or have a disability or another condition or qualification that might exempt them from these work reporting requirements. So this really should only apply to a very small number of people. But in other states that have done this, that have implemented work reporting requirements, the primary impact is that people who are still eligible for healthcare lose their healthcare because of the red tape, because they're required to report on a regular basis to the state, to a new bureaucracy that we will have to create, that they are working and they will have to prove that documentation or that they were eligible for an exemption. And so, you know, we all know, right? We all know in life that paperwork falls through the cracks. We also know that low-wage workers are more likely to be working, for example, in the gig economy, may have difficulty producing documentation of the number of hours they worked, even though they were working. So it will have a huge impact on working people and on low-wage workers who are dependent on this program and who are particularly vulnerable to losing their health insurance. The other thing I would say is that remaining 8% of people who this applies to, what we know about them is that they are not what the Republicans described, right? We all heard them describe young men sitting on the couch playing video games. That is a completely inaccurate portrayal. What we know is that out of that 8% of people, 4 out of 5 are women. They are primarily older women, and they are women in the sandwich generation, right? So they are women who were in the workforce and left the workforce because of caretaking responsibilities, to care for an aging parent, to care for a child, to care for a disabled spouse. So that's who we are talking about getting kicked off of the program because of these so-called work requirements.
Karen Savage Sung Won is executive director of the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network. We're also joined today by Amanda McAllister-Wallner, executive director of Health Access. Amanda, what would you like to add for people who are wondering, am I going to lose my health care?
You know, I want to talk a little bit more about really what's involved in this reporting, because it may seem innocuous, right? Oh, most people are already working. And you know, the folks in Congress love to describe this as a common sense reform. But what we're really talking about is that reporting requirement. It's not just that you're working, it's that you have to prove it. And we've heard, you know, in some of these states that have implemented these work reporting requirements, such as Arkansas and Georgia, that these reporting requirements are the equivalent of having to like do your taxes every month. We all know how time consuming that is, how difficult that is. It's an experience that most of us are familiar with. And as Karen said, for folks who are maybe working in a gig economy or in the gig economy, or you know, who don't make enough to have to pay income taxes every year, this is a tremendous reporting burden. And we know that people will fall through the cracks who should continue to have access to services simply because they you know, make a mistake in this reporting process. You know, how we implement it here in California will be incredibly important. There are things we can do to make it hopefully as easy as possible. But at the end of the day, you know, the vote for this was a vote, you know, co-signing that people who should have access to coverage because of the ACA expansion will lose access to coverage as a result of these new requirements. And it really is, there's no way to carve these out that doesn't impact folks who even the Republicans in Congress agree should have access to care. You know, there is no foolproof way to make sure that no one loses access, you know, through, you know, reporting errors or by mistake. So, you know, you know, it's something that I think, as advocates, we are trying to do whatever we can to strengthen the safety net programs, for folks who do fall through the cracks. But, you know, it's a tremendous loss to our healthcare system. The biggest cut to healthcare in the history of our country. And, you know, unfortunately, millions of Californians likely will be impacted, whether through directly losing coverage, you know, because of these new work reporting requirements, or as Karen also mentioned, you know, whether because of the, you know, additional billions of dollars that will be cut in funding to Medicaid, changes to eligibility, changes to benefits, this will have, you know, broad sweeping impacts on all of us who rely on the healthcare system here in California.
And that is Amanda McAllister-Wallner, Executive Director of Health Access. If you have any questions for our guests, if you're on Medi-Cal, if you receive food assistance, and you're concerned about what's to come, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. And as I said earlier, this bill will also affect people on Medicare and those who have health insurance through Covered California. And we'll be talking about that a little later in the show. Amber Crist is Managing Director of Health Advocacy with Justice in Aging. Amber, what would you say to older listeners who are, you know, live on Social Security and have Medi-Cal and are very concerned about this?
Yeah, thanks, Rose. And I just want to follow up really quickly on the work reporting requirements, because one of the populations that the lawmakers indicated that weren't going to be impacted by this bill or by work requirements for older adults and disabled people. And that simply isn't true. First of all, there's a lot of aging adults, 50 to 64 in California, who have lost their job or retired, are providing caregiving, may have a chronic condition, who do rely on Medi-Cal as their primary form of health coverage and will be subject to these reporting requirements. And like Amanda and Karen were talking about, those requirements are particularly arduous for older people, and they're more likely to not be able to fill out that reporting that might be required by the state of California. But another population that is impacted, as Karen noted, are caregivers. And a lot of older and disabled people rely on caregivers to remain living in their homes and their communities. And this is another population that would be impacted by these reporting requirements and could lose access to their own coverage, making it harder for them to provide that caregiving responsibility. There's also the fact that these reporting requirements put an enormous strain on California's administrative capacity to carry these out. It is really burdensome to put in place whole new requirements that have to be carried out on a month-to-month or six-month basis. And that means that other things go by the wayside. So I think, as we've been talking about, there's no carving out populations that these sort of reporting requirements are going to impact everyone in the program. But something we're particularly worried about with regard to these cuts is that California is going to lose a lot of federal funding. And that means that the Medi-Cal program, they're going to have to make cuts somewhere to make up for that loss of federal funding, whether that's eligibility or benefits or provider reimbursement. And given that 30% of all Medicaid dollars directly support Medicare enrollees, we're really concerned about how the cuts will impact those people who rely on Medi-Cal that wraps around what they might be covered under Medicare. So the big thing there is long-term care. With the cuts that California is going to be facing, we don't know exactly what they're going to cut and where. But what we do know is that in the past, California has historically cut home and community-based services. So things like the Home Supportive Services Program in California, things like the Adult Day Program. So as advocates for older adults in California, we're really worried about cuts to those home and community-based services that allow people to age in their homes and in their communities rather than having to go into a nursing facility. Hmm. And then cuts to other benefits that people on Medicare rely on that aren't covered by Medicare, things like dental, vision, and hearing. Those have all been cut in the past when California has faced a budget shortfall, and we anticipate the same moving forward in order to fill that budget hole.
Gosh, there's so much there. That's Amber Crist, Managing Director of Health Advocacy with Justice and Aging. We're also joined by Judy Mark, co-founder and president of Disability Voices United. Judy, we have a lot of listeners with disabilities who I'm sure are very concerned about what's to come with their health care. What message do you have for them?
Thanks, Rose. The disability community often lives our lives day to day and minute to minute because we have a lot on our plate. And so some of us have not been well informed about what this bill really is and what it will do for us. It's compounded by the fact that Republicans in Congress have announced that to the disability community that you're all good. We saved you from any cuts. In fact, just yesterday, I read an email from a prominent New York-based disability group that stated that the proposed provisions that would have most directly harmed people with disabilities were removed from the final bill. And that despite the significant cuts, that people with disabilities are protected. And so if that's a message that is getting out to the disability community, I'm here to tell you that that is just false. Mm. It actually shows that how we have to stay informed about what this bill really will do. What we have to realize is that if California receives billions of dollars less in federal funding, every single community will be affected. It's not like the state will say, okay, well, we have less money, so we'll give all the remaining money that we have to disabled people, and everybody else is going to be basically screwed. That's not the way things work. We know that we are going to be impacted. And remember that people with disabilities don't only rely on Medicaid for our health care. We also rely on it for our services and supports to stay in the community and to not be institutionalized. We know that institutionalization has historically been the a part of our history. And what we know is that these kind of levels of cuts will lead to more institutionalization of people with disabilities, because they won't be able to get the home and community-based services paid for by Medicaid to be able to remain in their home, to live more independently, and to be part of our communities.
So what does this mean, Judy? I mean, we talked about the bill overall yesterday, and a couple of people wrote in and said, it's pretty obvious what we're going to see in the years to come. More people on the streets, possibly more crime, because people need to do something to feed their families, and people are really struggling in this country. Can you talk more about what we expect to happen in the next couple of years? Because again, we should point out, the tax cuts for the wealthy will go into effect soon, but these Medicaid cuts will not go into effect until after the midterms, right?
That is true, which of course presents us with the challenge of communicating to the community, to the disability community in particular, that even if you haven't felt the impact of these budget cuts yet, it's coming. It's coming down the pike, and we need to get prepared. The other thing that I really want to say to the disability community is that it's not just about us. Many of us are supported by people who are part of the Medicaid expansion program because they don't have ways to get their health insurance any other way. And many caregivers are low income workers. Mm-hmm. So we have to make sure that our caregivers, the people who are our support staff, who help us live and work in the community, also have access to good health care, because people with disabilities are more vulnerable to more severe outbreaks of pandemics and other kinds of contagious diseases. And we have to make sure that the people who are coming into our homes and supporting us are actually getting the kind of health care they need to keep us safe. So the layers are really quite difficult to describe to folks, and yet we need to figure out a way. I honestly think that's the challenge of the advocates you have on today, is how do we explain what is going to happen in a way that people will understand before it actually happens? And that is going to be very challenging.
Well, it's very challenging. I'm reading a piece on Axios about timelines, because Leslie just wrote in and said, can your guests outline the dates various service cuts and changes are due to take place? So there's so many dates here. According to Axios, though beneficiaries will get warnings ahead of time, the work requirements will go into effect a month until after November 2026. The bill increases the frequency of Medicaid eligibility checks to every 6 months, starting on December 31st, 2006. People in the Medicaid expansion population who retain coverage under the new system could have to pay $35 and cost sharing per service starting in October 2028. I mean, this is just, there's so many dates here. And then when we look at the Affordable Care Act exchanges, the bill does not extend the Biden-era enhanced premium subsidies, which are set to expire January 1st of 2026. So there's just so many dates here. How should we be talking to people about when this goes into effect, Karen? How do we let people know how to prepare?
So I think it's important to know that a lot of these things, while they may not go into effect until 2026 or 2027, the state is going to have to start making choices now that will impact people. And healthcare facilities are going to make choices now that will impact people. We're already seeing hospitals make significant layoffs and consider ways to reduce their services, right? So those are things we're starting to see immediately while we're waiting for some of this to play out. But I think the other really important point here is that for some of this, the state has important choices to make. Just like Congress had an important choice to make between enriching billionaires and protecting families and workers, and they made the wrong choice, the state in many ways has the same choice to make here, and the state can make the right choice, right? We live in California. fourth largest economy in the world, we have the opportunity to think about how can we raise additional sources of revenue for our state budget that can enable us to protect as much of the Medicaid program, as much of our food assistance as possible in the face of these federal cuts, keeping in mind that some of the richest people in California are going to get significant tax cuts because of the federal bill. So we in California, I think, have an imperative to figure out how do we ensure that the wealthiest among us are paying their fair share so that we can sustain our safety net. So not all of this is a foregone conclusion in that way. I think the state has really important choices to make, and it's imperative that the state choose families and workers and older adults and people with disabilities over billionaires and CEOs and people like Elon Musk.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. And after the break, I'd love to ask you all, it seems like now is the perfect time to bring back a universal healthcare bill, because that would cover and deal with a lot of these issues. We did a show about this. I had to look it up. Back in February 2022 is really the last time that Democrats took universal health care seriously. It never got up for a vote, even though Democrats have a supermajority in Sacramento. Today, we are talking about the cuts that are expected to health care. We'll also talk about food assistance because of the Trump GOP budget bill. If you have any questions, comments, we'd love to hear from you. Thoughts, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Karen Savage-Sungwon is Executive Director of the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network. Judy Mark is co-founder and president of Disability Voices United. Amanda McAllister-Wallner is Executive Director of Health Access, and Amber Christ is Managing Director of Health Advocacy with Justice and Aging. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll discuss the ramifications of the USAID officially shutting down. It happened on July 1st. Researchers say if the current cuts continue through 2030, 14 million people could lose their lives. And since we were talking about caregiving on today's show, I just wanted to remind you, I hope you can join us tonight for a special live Your Call show at the San Francisco Public Library, the main library, 100 Larkin Street in San Francisco. We'll be talking about the caregiving crisis. And now, because of this bill, there's even a lot more to talk about. And I'll be asking California State Assembly member Matt Haney whether or not Democrats are going to bring back some sort of a universal health care bill. We hope you can join us tonight. Caregiving groups will be talking about services they provide at 5, and then the live show will start at 6. Find more information on the events page, kalw.org. Today, we're talking with social service advocates in California about how they are preparing for these cuts and the message they have for those of you who are very concerned about what's to come. Karen Savage-Sungwon is Executive Director of the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network. Judy Mark is co-founder and president of Disability Voices United. Amanda McAllister-Wallner is Executive Director of Health Access. Amber Christ is Managing Director of Health Advocacy with Justice and Aging. So Amanda, as Karen said, Governor Newsom loves to talk about the fact that California is now the fourth largest economy in the world. What will it take for Democrats to bring back the universal health care coverage bill? So in 2022, we did a show with California State Assembly member Ash Kalra, who pulled the bill. He's the sponsor, saying it just didn't have the votes to pass. And supporters said that he should have forced Democrats to go on the record. So this was a universal health care coverage bill that would have provided all Californians comprehensive care under a system called CalCare. Now that these cuts are going to happen and there's so much confusion, what will it take for Democrats to bring this bill back?
Yeah, no, thank you. And you know, California has had over the last decade a lot to be proud of in this regard. Prior to the ACA, almost 20% of Californians were uninsured. And thanks to the robust implementation of the Affordable Care Act here in California and the ways in which the state has gone above and beyond what the federal government requires to make affordable healthcare actually a reality for folks in California. We actually have near universal coverage here in California. Just about 5% of people are uninsured in California today. Most have access to an affordable health plan, and the state is, has been looking at ways through waivers and flexibilities to increase that coverage, to get to true universal coverage here in California, whether that's through your employer, through Medicaid, through Covered California, or other private options. The state has really taken, has made this a priority in the coming years. And as you said, Governor Newsom has really touted, his role in helping California reach universal coverage through things like the Health for All expansion. Unfortunately, this is going to deal a huge blow to California's ambitions to truly reach universal coverage. A couple of years ago, the Governor Newsom signed SB 770, which, required the state to really investigate what waivers would be required in order to use federal funding that we get to fund a universal healthcare system like the one that you're talking about. And it's because the biggest barrier to covering people is money. Healthcare is very expensive, as any of us who have, gone to the doctor know, right? That, it's very expensive to access healthcare. Our healthcare system, is the most expensive in the world. In the U.S., we spend, more on healthcare than anywhere else in the world. So really the underlying question of how do we cover everyone comes down to where do we get the funding to do that? As the state was kind of looking at what waivers would be necessary, this really deals a huge blow to those ambitions, because it takes billions of dollars out of our healthcare system. And it unfortunately is going to set that goal of universal coverage back. And it's going to require the state to really take a leadership role in trying to figure out how do we fill these gaps? How do we make sure that we're not going back to a situation where, roughly 1 in 5 Californians did not have access to health insurance. Their primary, place of getting their healthcare was the emergency room. Where people were waiting until they were too sick to go to school or to go to work, had to go to the emergency room to deal with something that, should be a manageable condition, like asthma or diabetes, right? When we have access to preventative and primary care, when people have insurance, when it's, they don't have to worry about going bankrupt in order to get basic health care. That's good for all of us.
Amanda,
the state is going to have to really.
I want to jump in, because the problem is, I hear what you're saying. So I just put in my information at Covered California. The lowest plan I could buy right now is $755 a month. I mean, this is just so unaffordable for so many people. And it's important to note, according to the LA Times, because of this bill, Covered California estimates that as many as 660,000 of the roughly 2 million people in the program will either be stripped of their coverage or drop out due to increased cost and the onerous new mandates to stay enrolled. Those who do stay could be hit with an average monthly premium increase of up to 66%. So if my lowest option right now is $755 a month, I mean, you can't even imagine a 10% increase, let alone a 66% increase. Does anybody else want to talk about, again, what it will take to bring back universal health care? Because it tends to get shot down. Yes, it's a massive state. It's very expensive. But we lead the nation in billionaires. San Francisco has more billionaires per capita than any other city in the world. So does anyone else want to talk about what it would take to possibly just even put it up for a vote or have a debate, given that Democrats have a supermajority in Sacramento?
Hi, Rose. This is Judy. I would say that California is going to have a choice, and it's unclear how our policymakers are going to react. They can allow millions of people to be thrown off of healthcare, or they can figure out other ways to increase the revenues in the state to make up the loss of federal funds. That's a hard choice, especially when you have people with high aspirations for political office or want to get reelected. You know, of course, we in the disability community choose the latter, where we want to increase the revenues in the state. And I think there are creative ways of doing that, which will not impact people who are in middle income folks, but will really target those corporations and companies that are profiting from this budget bill, that are going to get huge amounts of tax decreases and tax and in their coffers are going to be so increased because of the same budget bill that is throwing people off of healthcare, that we should be looking at those groups, particularly those who don't provide healthcare to their own employees. And I think that there is a path forward. To me, it's a very clear path forward. But I hope that our policymakers have the courage to do this.
We have an email from Susie who says, so many of us have worked on getting a single payer system in California. The Democrats don't want it. I was a delegate to the party. It's the rich and the insurance companies that stop it. Capitalism is the problem. Well, thank you for that. Just doing this show, we're going to have to bring some politicians on to talk about this, because it's just such an important issue. And so many people, unfortunately, tragically, are going to lose their insurance and then food assistance. Can we also talk about food assistance? Because people are also obviously concerned about this one. About 5.3 million people in California used CalFresh last year. This is California's food assistance program. Governor Newsom said that hundreds of thousands of Californians will be at risk of losing it. So, Karen, what do we know about who will be losing their food assistance after the next year's midterms?
Yeah, so similar to the Medicaid cuts, really what the Republicans are doing here is trying to make it more difficult for people to be, trying to make fewer people eligible and trying to make it more difficult for the people who are eligible to receive those benefits. And they are also reducing the benefits for those who make it through the system and continue to be eligible. So they are raising the age under which people must continue to work to receive food benefits. So this is going to be a particular impact on older adults that perhaps Amber can talk about. And they are also really shifting the cost for the program more and more onto states. So again, this is a place where the state is going to have some really important choices to make about whether we make cuts like the Republicans in Congress are trying to force us to, or whether we find other ways to pay for this basic need for all people, which is food, and something that particularly is impacting families with young children, and workers, low-wage workers who are struggling just to get by.
And also, there was an incredible op-ed in the Sacramento Bee on July 1st by Lee Dason Lamb, who is a medical student at UC Davis. And he spoke with 326 students who attend the College of Medicine at Cal North State University, Touro University, California, UC Davis, and UC San Francisco. So these are all young people. A lot of them are first-generation college students who want to become doctors to serve their community. And Karen, according to their answers, 87% of them currently use food stamps. So these are amazing young people who want to be doctors to serve their community. And now they're concerned. First of all, the fact that 87% use food stamps, we need to talk about that more, but they're very concerned about what's to come. So this is hitting a lot of people that might be surprising to some.
Yeah, I mean, look, this entire bill is an absolute tragedy. It's an outrage. The people who voted for it should be very ashamed of that vote. We worked really hard in Congressman Valadao's district, where you talked about, more people are enrolled in Medicaid in that district than any other district. Many people are also enrolled in CalFresh. And in that district, I will just point out that nearly 9 out of every 10 children are enrolled in the Medicaid program. Those are largely children who are also qualifying for CalFresh based on their family income, right? So this is a huge impact on people who are most vulnerable, both through cuts to healthcare and through cuts to food assistance. It is also the largest cut to SNAP, to the food assistance program, since that program began during the Great Depression. So that is how far backwards Republicans in Congress are taking us, and it will have a huge impact. It is not only going to be limited to certain populations, it will have impacts throughout the state of California and throughout the country. Even people who right now don't think it will impact them, it is going to have such a huge ripple effect on our safety net and on how we function as a society that it will impact all of us.
Next Wednesday, we'll be doing a show with people who work at food banks throughout Northern California who say that they're already struggling to keep up, and this is just going to make things worse. Amber, what would you say to older people who rely on some sort of food assistance about what's to come? And then, I mean, where do you go? How do you fill the gap, given that the gap is already so big?
Right. And as Karen noted, the bill would increase the age of individuals up to age 64 who would have to meet reporting requirements to maintain their food assistance. So what you're really talking about here is like compounding impact, right? You have someone who's now going to have to report in order to maintain their healthcare coverage, but they're also going to have to report to maintain their food assistance. And if they don't comply with both, they're at risk of losing either or both. Which is just very devastating for individuals and for families. Not to mention, Karen noted this, but the enormous amount of federal funding that is being reduced to the state of California for food assistance. So that gap, that hole in the budget for food assistance, and you combine that with the healthcare, the Medicaid funding hole, that just puts everything at risk for even further cuts, right? Whether it's food assistance or benefit cuts or eligibility cuts, it's compounding. So we can't just look at one of these things in isolation. We have to look at everything together and what those impacts could be. And that kind of comes back to Rose, something you were asking about is like, how do we think about what this looks like moving forward, and is there universal health care or some other thing? But really, there's kind of a both and strategy. We need to be able to be putting forward a positive vision for universal coverage, including coverage that people have access to basic health care, but also long-term care coverage, which is really unaffordable at this point too. So California has to have that positive vision at the state level, and we need to have a positive vision at the federal level. And on the other side of the coin, we need to be providing a ton of education, to Judy's point, about what this bill does to people. We have known what's in this bill in some form for less than 2 months. The House didn't have its bill language until the middle of May and voted on it. So this has moved so fast. And when people learn about what's in this bill, and the harms that it has in it, they really, really dislike it, for very good reason. So the more we can educate, the more likely we're able to both possibly repeal some of these harmful provisions, and then mitigate some of these harms at the state level.
Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you. I remember doing some work on a single-payer healthcare system back before 2000. I think that's the way to go. But your guests have already brought this up. I think a single payer is right. But you're up against huge interest, the hospital interests in this state, the insurance interests in this state. And I wouldn't, I'd be very surprised, excuse me, if the elected officials in Sacramento are going to take those on and really say, look, we have to go for single payer. I think that's a big push. I think it should be done, and you should bring on politicians to ask them why they're not. One other thing is this: Medi-Cal serves, I mean, there are a lot of doctors and dentists who don't take Medi-Cal, mm-hmm. all right? They get licensed in the state of California. You know, if you want to practice law or you want to be a doctor or you want to be a dentist, you've got to get a license from the state of California. It seems to me that it would be doable for the state to say, once again, this is going to be up against a lot of big interests, the state to say to these people, look, you have to take at least 10% of your business, your clients, your patients, regardless of the ability to pay, and either accept Medi-Cal or go practice medicine in another state. So I think there are creative ways to do this. It's just going to take a huge amount of pressure on the people in Sacramento.
Well, thank you, Greg. And we're going to start making phone calls to see who will come on to talk about these issues because it's so important. Would anyone like to respond to Greg's comment?
Yeah, I want to say, I think Greg has a really good point that the profiteering in our healthcare system is what's driving the really high costs that all of us are burdened with, that's pushing people into medical debt, and that's making it really difficult for us to implement a more universal system of healthcare and health coverage. So we do need to be challenging the corporate interests that are making healthcare unsustainable for us as individuals and families and for the state. But I also want to say, I think the way that we do that is we need to keep the pressure on. We need to remember that our members of Congress, all of our Republicans, as you said at the top of the show, they voted for this. And if they get away with voting for this, it is going to make it that much harder for us to be able to bring meaningful change in California. So now is the time for people across the state to show their outrage at this bill, to demand better, to demand that we have representatives that care about our healthcare and that put working families over corporations. We need to show our federal representatives and our state representatives what we want as Californians and what we will vote for. And we cannot miss the opportunity to do that. It's why it's so important that you're having this show today and that we're making sure that voters are educated about what has just happened and what the options are for Californians going forward.
Well, thank you for the call, Greg. We have a few emails from listeners who say, please talk about Medicare. So I'm a little confused by this one. And if any of you have information, please share it. So David Dayan reports in the American Prospect that because of a statutory requirement to automatically impose budget cuts when legislation increases the deficit, the bill would require automatic sequestration cuts across the board. Medicare is one of the programs that will face the axe, and the damage sums to $490 billion over the next 10 years, starting in the next fiscal year that begins in October. While many of the cuts are delayed to help Republicans win their reelection campaigns, the Medicare cuts must begin next year. So, okay, if this is $490 over the next 10 years, we're talking about, I mean, you know, $49 billion. What does that mean exactly? Do any of you know?
Yeah, this is Amber. So that's a budget rule. And the intent of that rule was to try to hold lawmakers more accountable to being budget responsible. And clearly we're not seeing that in this bill. We have an enormous deficit triggered in the range of, you know, $3.5 trillion. And so what it does is it triggers a rule that requires automatic cuts to certain programs, including Medicare, almost $500 billion, as you noted, over a 10-year period. Now, that is what has been, that's been triggered, but the extent of whether those cuts will actually take place is another matter. Every single time sequestration or these cuts have been triggered in the past, Congress has acted to make sure that they didn't happen. And we anticipate that now. But again, Congress is going to have to take affirmative action to prevent those cuts from going into effect. So I don't want to say that they won't happen because there is still a possibility, but we anticipate Congress will act to prevent those cuts from going into effect.
And then again, the timing of this. So these cuts are going into effect after the midterms, but as many of you have said, states are going to have to make really difficult decisions and start cutting now, which we already saw in the governor's budget. Final thoughts, what parting words would you like to leave with people who are very concerned about what's to come? Amanda, let's start with you, and you have about 30 or so seconds.
Thank you. You know, I think remember this and remember who is responsible for these cuts. You know, every time that legislators said this won't affect the most vulnerable, this won't lead to people losing coverage, that was a lie, and we're going to see that over the next few years. And I think we have a responsibility to hold them accountable for the impacts of their votes and their decisions.
Amanda McAllister-Wallner is Executive Director of Health Access. Judy, what would you like to add?
Similarly, people with disabilities have long memories. We are going to remember how we were betrayed by members of Congress who told us that they were going to vote against these cuts to Medicaid. And we saw them choosing politics over people, choosing cowardice over their constituents, and we're not going to stand for it. And so our goal over the next year is to build political power and to hold our elected officials accountable, both at the state level and the federal level.
Judy Mark is co-founder and president of Disability Voices United. Karen, your final thoughts?
I would just simply say, you know, be mad, be loud, and remember to vote.
Karen Savage-Sungwan is executive director of the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network. And Amber, your final thoughts?
And just building on that, I think it's really important that we're sharing this information with as many people as possible. So tell your family, tell your friends, educate on what's in this bill so we can hold lawmakers accountable. But we can also try to stop this and mitigate the harm at both the federal and state level.
Amber Crist is Managing Director of Health Advocacy with Justice and Aging. Amber, Amanda, Judy, and Karen, thank you so much for your work. Thank you for joining us. And we'd love to have you back to continue to get this important information out.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
Thank you all. And coming up tomorrow, we'll be talking about USAID officially shutting down, which happened on July 1st. Researchers say if the current cuts continue through 2030, 14 million people could lose their lives. We'll speak with two reporters who wrote very important pieces about the ramifications of these cuts. And then related to today's show, next Tuesday, we'll be speaking with doctors to find out how these cuts are going to affect care. Wednesday, we'll be speaking with people working at food banks to talk about how the cuts will affect food assistance. And then again, if you're in the Bay Area, we hope you can join us tonight for a special live Your Call, Understanding the Caregiving Crisis. Caregiving organizations will be sharing resources at 5, and then the show begins at 6. It's at the San Francisco Maine Public Library. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.